This podcast will discuss a recent paper in the Journal of Applied Physiology entitled The Effect of Aging and Cardiorespiratory Fitness on the Lung Diffusing Capacity Response to Exercise in Healthy Humans. The authors are Drs. Kaufman, Carlson, Miller, Johnson, and Taylor from the Mayo Clinic and the University of Leeds. Let me begin by asking Dr. Taylor, representing the authors, to give us a brief summary of the paper by telling us what was the question, what was measured, and what was found.
We know that healthy aging is associated with deterioration in the structure and the function of the pulmonary circulation that's characterized by an increase in pulmonary vascular stiffness and pulmonary vascular pressures. And the question that we asked was this aging-associated deterioration in the structure and function of the pulmonary circulation, did that relate to a change in the overall lung diffusion capacity response to exercise? So effectively, was a deterioration in pulmonary vascular function, did that translate into a limitation in the overall lung diffusion capacity, alveolar capillary membrane conductance, and capillary blood volume response to exercise, not only in aged adults, but in aged, highly fit adults who'd maintained a high percentage of VO2 max. What we found was that there was no plateau in any measure of lung diffusion capacity from rest through to peak exercise. At no point did lung diffusion capacity appear to become limited, regardless of age or cardiorespiratory fitness. The slope of the lung diffusion capacity response relative to cardiac output was very similar across age and fitness. The increase in lung diffusion capacity for a given increase in cardiac output was very similar across ages and cardiorespiratory fitness. Aging was associated with a reduction in both resting lung diffusion capacity and lung diffusion capacity at peak work, and that systematically DLCO was lower during exercise with aging, but higher in individuals that had maintained fitness. And finally, both resting lung diffusion capacity and the increase in lung diffusion capacity from rest to peak exercise was significantly related to overall maximal oxygen consumption, again, regardless of fitness and age.
Our expert discussant today is Dr. Bruce Thompson from the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne, Australia.
Well, I very much enjoyed reading this paper because it was actually quite timely, and it's an area of gas exchange physiology that I think has been left unattended for probably over a decade now. So when we're working in clinical laboratories, this is something that we think about all the time. The biggest outcome was that the pulmonary capillary bed is still able to expand independently of the cardiorespiratory fitness, and really got me thinking that if the actual ability of the pulmonary capillary bed to expand during exercise is the same across age as well as level of fitness, then the immediate question that popped in my head, which is actually the next thing that I think needs to be looked at, is what happens in disease. This is something that I think is a really fertile ground to do further work. If there was a criticism that was going to be made, is in relation to adequate power and the numbers. The study was done extremely well. It was very carefully conducted, and they are difficult studies to do. So I can understand that getting a very large cohort is difficult. However, the numbers were relatively small, but the authors addressed this very well in the manuscript. So I think it's an important paper, and I think it's a paper that's going to lead to significant discussion in the future.
I'd like to ask Ryan a question about mechanisms. When I think about diffusing capacity and the pulmonary circulation, I think about two physiologic functions. One of them is gas exchange, the uptake of oxygen, and the other is pulmonary pressure flow relationships in the circulation. And I'm wondering whether your data cast any light on whether either of those processes were affected by either age or fitness.
We do have an index of exercise-induced arterial hypoxemia in our subjects looking at arterial oxygen saturation. And we did see evidence of arterial hypoxemia with the exercise in a handful of our subjects, an SaO2 of 92% or below. But we only saw it likely in a limited number of subjects. More importantly, the distribution of the subjects we saw it in was across the group. That's to say that it wasn't the older subjects or the fitter subjects that we saw a greater prevalence of exercise-induced arterial hypoxemia. We don't think that impairment in gas exchange is the mechanism here. We think it's more in relation to the second point, that the increase in pulmonary vascular pressures and pulmonary vascular resistance that's related to pulmonary vascular dysfunction and remodeling with aging is having an impact on, for example, cardiac output, an increase in right ventricular afterload limiting cardiac output. Now, unfortunately, in this study, we don't have a measure of pulmonary vascular pressures and we don't have a measure of cardiac performance. We are currently doing those studies where we are looking directly at pulmonary arterial pressure and pulmonary wedge pressure under right heart catheterization and comparing and contrasting those responses to exercise in young and old adults and also measuring lung diffusion capacity. But it's a little too early just now to speculate on what that will show. But we think that's the mechanism. We think that there's a limitation in cardiac output secondary to the increase in pulmonary vascular pressures. And hopefully that will bear forward as we do more data collection.
Bruce, what's your response to that analysis?
I do agree, and I find it fascinating that arterial oxygen desaturation was not different across all the groups. That tends to suggest that there's actually not limiting gas exchange. So we have a situation where the pulmonary capillary bed can expand and change with exercise equally amongst these four different groups. It almost crosses off one of the potential outcomes in some of these patients that we see, that this may not affect gas exchange. It's due to something else.
I am wrestling with what I am seeing as maybe a paradox here, that on the one hand, the data are showing that the expansion of at least the pulmonary microcirculation with exercise, as reflected by the increase in DLCO per unit increase in blood flow, is not different amongst all four groups. Yet, on the other hand, I just heard Brian point a finger at the possibility that there is something going on in the pulmonary vasculature that affects cardiac function. And I'm wondering if we can try and resolve that.
I think it's worth pointing out the techniques that we use to measure lung diffusion capacity and then get our measurement of pulmonary capillary blood volume and, for that matter, cardiac output. They're effectively a measure of the pulmonary microcirculation. It doesn't give us an idea of what is going on with the pulmonary artery or the pulmonary vein, for example. So we really are measuring what is going on with the pulmonary microvasculature. And yeah, in this study, it appears like the expansion of that microvasculature and its ability to increase surface area and increase lung diffusion capacity for a given unit increase in cardiac output doesn't appear to be affected by age or fitness. But that's not to say that if we were able to directly study the pulmonary artery and the pulmonary arterial tree itself, we wouldn't see differences in pressure. And we know that an increase in pulmonary arterial pressure is related to greater increases in pulmonary arterial pressure, both at rest and during exercise, in older individuals appears to be related to a lower maximal oxygen consumption. So while the microcirculation appears to be able to handle the increase in cardiac output, perhaps there might be more going on with the increase in pulmonary arterial pressure and the pressure difference across the system, i.e. pulmonary vascular resistance. And until we make those direct measures of pressure, we won't be able to really confirm that. And I say that's why we're doing those studies right now.
That would certainly be the next step in my sense of things. But then we'll be faced with deciding between association and cause and effect. And that is always a very tough nut to crack. Any comments on that?
What we're doing with some of the work that we're undertaking right now is we are studying the effect of the pressure flow response, so pulmonary arterial pressure relative to cardiac output, rest and through exercise, with and without a pulmonary vasodilator. So we're trying to take away some of the pressure. What we're able to see right now is that in the older adults, as we'd expect, pulmonary arterial pressure is higher for a given cardiac output. The slope of that response is steeper in the older adults. But with the pulmonary vasodilator, we get a response that seems much more like their younger counterparts. The slope of that volume pressure flow response becomes shallower, and it certainly in a very limited number of subjects so far overlays the normal response of the younger adults. So this would tell us that relieving some of the pressure has a direct effect on pulmonary hemodynamics. Now we need to carry this forward and see if that improvement in pulmonary hemodynamics translates itself into an improvement in lung diffusion capacity, exercise tolerance, and in overall oxygen consumption. And that might give us some idea of a cause and effect rather than just association.
The concept of measuring pulmonary artery pressure is going to be critical for moving this work forward, and especially in relation to working out what's happening to the microvasculature of the lung. And the measurements that's been done in terms of TLCO and the rebreathing cardiac output have very similar properties. Obviously, the ones using a diffusion-limited gas versus a perfusion-limited gas, but the effects of distribution of ventilation, changes in the capillary bed, all these things will affect both of those measurements equally. And that's been shown previously in the modelling sense, that if you have changes in ventilation distribution, they affect both of those measurements pretty well the same. To tease out exactly what's happening within the pulmonary microvasculature is going to be difficult when you're using two techniques that are actually independently affected by that same thing. I think it's critical to move on to using another type of measurement in terms of pulmonary artery pressure.
I might add to that the cardiac output measurement issue you mentioned, Bruce, and the covariance possibly between DLCO and cardiac output because of the methodological similarities may be responsible for a relationship I observed in looking at Brian's data in a slightly different way, where I plotted cardiac output as a function of VO2 in his subject groups, just using the mean values at peak exercise in each of those four groups. And those four data points from the four groups, the old, the young, the fit, the not so fit, lay on a beautiful straight line with a slope essentially identical to that known in the literature for normal subjects. But the absolute values of cardiac output were all a little bit low by maybe 3 liters a minute compared to what's been shown in the literature. And that might reflect heterogeneity in distribution, the way Bruce was just saying. Brian, any comment on that possibility that there are some technical issues here that might bear some thought and revision in the future?
That is a very fair comment and certainly something that we are aware of. Certainly, the acetylene uptake technique to measure cardiac output appears to be a little more variable at rest and at peak exercise. Perhaps doesn't track as well more direct measures of cardiac output, again, at rest and at peak exercise. And that likely reflects a ventilation perfusion mismatch, some heterogeneity going on there that is at least improved during submaximal or moderate exercise. So it may well be that these peak exercise, very heavy to severe workloads, we need to use a different measure of cardiac output and potentially of pulmonary vascular pressure too. But I think it's also worth saying that picking that alternate technique, while we appreciate the limitations of the acetylene uptake technique for cardiac output, the alternatives are also quite challenging. It's something very invasive, direct thicker thermodilution, or doing imaging of the heart. But again, that's quite challenging at peak exercise when you have a lot of body movement, a lot of lung movement, and obscuring your image. And that's the same is true also for pulmonary arterial pressure and pulmonary vascular pressures. Right-sided catheterization is clearly the gold standard, but is incredibly invasive and a very difficult technique to do. There are several very good transthoracic ultrasonography techniques, but again, they suffer with the same issue during peak exercise in that they're very different to do. The subject typically has to be in at the very least a semi-recumbent position, making exercise quite challenging. And we also have the lung obscuring the image issue, especially at higher ventilation. So while the techniques we've used do have their limitations and it might play a little role in the data that we have, the alternatives also are quite challenging and we have to work through those.
Bruce, do you have any further comments?
I think I'll just confirm the comments about measuring cardiac output. It's a very difficult thing to do. And even if you use thermodilution, the coefficient of variation of it is up to 30%. This is why this study is quite good, because these are really difficult studies to do and to do well. I think I'd just like to reiterate that point and also confirm your point, Peter, as well, that with the measurement of DLCO cardiac output using a rebreathing technique and VO2, there's many variables in the equations of these that are the same. And I think as a general comment, even though intellectually you might be thinking that these things are measuring slightly different things, there's a number of elements in each of the equations in particular that are exactly the same variables. So they'll tend to correlate with each other.
I would like to close this podcast discussion by thanking both Brian Taylor from Leeds and Bruce Thompson from Melbourne for their expert insight and interesting discussion.